ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Why did Matthew Flinders write such saucy letters to his best friend, George Bass?
Who really chopped off Chopper's ears?
And why did they name a swimming pool after an Australian Prime Minister who drowned?
I mean, why didn't they just use Harry Holt's high school nickname, Puss? These are the kind of historical questions we'll be asking on The Dead Can't Sue.
Search The Dead Can't Sue podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
According to Donald Trump, nobody has ever seen anything like it. The new, retrofitted Air Force One, which was gifted to the US president by Qatar, had all the bells and whistles, he said. So, when the New York Times reported that security concerns forced Trump to abandon the new plane and use the old one, the president wasn't happy. Today, staff writer at The Atlantic, David A. Graham, on the latest attack on the press. I'm Sam Hawley on Gadigal Land in Sydney. This is ABC News Daily. David, why don't we start our conversation back in May last year, when you and other journalists had an inkling that Trump was about to accept a rather lavish gift from Qatar. Remind me about that.
Yeah, that's right. The president started talking about the idea that he was going to receive a 747 from the Emirate of Qatar.
You know, we're very disappointed that it's taking Boeing so long to build a new Air Force One. You know, we have an Air Force One that's 40 years old. If we can get a 747 as a contribution to our Defense Department, I think that was a very nice gesture.
And this is something Trump has been sort of concerned about Air Force One for some time. He thinks that the planes that the president flies on are not up to snuff, either in terms of their, you know, modern design or the outside decor.
And I said to myself, you know, these countries, they have a lot of respect for us, a lot, and yet they have a plane that's much better and much newer. It's a little ridiculous out there.
And it's been a slow process to replace them. And he got sick of waiting, basically, and wanted to accept this gift as a kind of interim Air Force One.
And as you noted at the time, the astonishing thing about this was that the president was doing it out in the open. He wasn't hiding any of this.
Right. And it was unclear whether it was being given as a gift to the nation or to Trump personally,
yes,
and how it would work legally if it was a gift to Trump personally. There was some suggestion that rather than becoming part of the national fleet, it would go to Trump's presidential library and museum when he left office. So there were all of these very weird questions about why you would take a, you know, multi-hundred-million-dollar gift from a foreign country and why that would possibly be proper.
And then, of course, Donald Trump, he does accept this plane, saying it would have been stupid not to.
Now, I could be a stupid person and say, oh, no, we don't want a free plane. We give free things out. We'll take one, too.
But straight away, there is concern about security. It's thought so much could go wrong.
That's right. I mean, these planes are incredibly complicated, even for modern airliners, which are, of course, complicated themselves. Air Force One has a variety of complicated defense systems and communications tools. And also, any airplane has a lot of space in which you can hide bugs or other sort of security issues. And so there's some question of how the U.S. intelligence services and you know, defense establishment would guarantee that this plane was clean, so to speak, and safe and not a security risk.
So the White House, it gets this plane and then it retrofits it. And a job that should take years, from all reports, takes about 10 months. So just tell me, David, before we move on, do we know what it's like inside? I assume there's a bit of gold.
You know, I actually haven't seen a great deal of images inside, but that is always Trump's aesthetic.
Yes.
There's a lot of leather. I've seen some pictures of bookshelves. So it's meant to look very fancy and very high-minded.
All right. So the inaugural flight takes off on July the 1st within America, but then Trump flies to Ankara, the capital of Turkey, for the NATO summit last week. But the New York Times then revealed that he had to fly home on the old Air Force One as a security precaution. So what do we know about that?
We're still getting some of the details. Mm-hmm. You know, the big picture is that, you know, the president's security folks were concerned about threats from Iran related to the ongoing war and worried that flying, you know, in the Middle East, there might be some sort of danger. And so instead of flying home on the plane that he took, he took one of these other planes. They then flew to the UK and switched back to the Qatari 747
right there.
And what we learned from reporting in the New York Times and some other places was that there was worries that the defense systems just are not all in place. They're elaborate, like anti-missile defense and what else were not clear. The sort of thing that I think for understandable reasons, government sources don't like to talk about. But they simply weren't installed yet. And so in order to make sure that the president and his advisors and the press traveling on the plane were safe, they made the decision that he needed to fly on the older but safer plane.
And Trump, he said that the reason for the switch was that the new plane was headed to Europe to visit US military bases so the soldiers could see it.
It's flying to Europe to one of the big bases, two or three of the big bases, where we can show it to the people so the soldiers can see it because it's truly magnificent.
What did you make of that?
I make of that Trump is sort of trying to save face. Mm. There's often a kind of spin in this situation. Just as with the, you know, it would be stupid not to accept it. He manages to find some sort of argument, which is not always all that convincing, but it allows him to dispute whatever else is being reported or whatever is apparent.
All right, well, David, let's turn now to the Trump administration's response to this New York Times reporting. Now, over the weekend, the paper revealed that four of its reporters had been issued with subpoenas by the Justice Department, which, of course, is headed by the acting Attorney General, Todd Blanche. In some cases, federal agents turned up to their homes, didn't they?
That's right. So we learned that the director of the FBI, Kash Patel, was summoned to the White House because Trump was very upset about this leak about information. And it's interesting. Initially, the White House response was to say that it was fake news. But they were concerned enough that it was a real leak of real information that they launched this big investigation. We've seen reports that they collected phones from White House staff and forced them to open their phones and show that they were not the leakers or try to demonstrate they weren't the leakers. And then they issued these subpoenas trying to get the reporters to reveal who told them this information about the security risks on the plane.
And Todd Blanche, you know, he took over, of course, when Pam Bondi was fired. He's Trump's former personal lawyer, and he really does have form in this area, doesn't he? He's gone after reporters before.
That's right. To see these kinds of subpoenas, I would say, is not unheard of, but it is unusual. It depends on the administration and the situation. But there's usually an acknowledgement that forcing reporters to turn over sources, even if the reporters are not the targets of an investigation, is a threat to press freedom. Mm. But we have seen under Blanche, the department has issued subpoenas to reporters from the Washington Post. It's issued subpoenas to the Wall Street Journal and now also to these New York Times reporters. In every case, the same question. They're trying to find who has been leaking information to the press.
Yeah, and it is important to note that Trump and Blanche are very close. And this relationship, it has been raised during this Senate hearing to confirm Mr. Blanche's permanent appointment to head the Justice Department.
In less than 18 months at the Department of Justice, you've shown you're still President Trump's personal attorney. Your tenure can be summed up in the four words you said, quote, "I love you, sir," to President Trump.
This was your. I mean, their relationship goes back a long way, doesn't it?
That's right. It's a, you know, Blanche served as Trump's personal lawyer, including in some of the high-profile criminal proceedings that Trump faced before he was reelected. During hearings, he sort of slipped and said he is Trump's lawyer and then said, no, I was Trump's lawyer.
Yes. Are you and President Trump friends?
I'm his lawyer, was his lawyer, and now I'm the deputy attorney general.
And one thing that's notable is since he became the acting attorney general, the Justice Department has taken a lot of these actions. So it feels as though one reason Pam Bondi was forced out was that there were lines she was unwilling to cross. Blanche has not shown any hesitation about crossing those lines.
Yeah, and Todd Blanche, during those hearings, he was asked about the journalists being subpoenaed, and he said, you know, they're not the target. As we mentioned, the Justice Department says it's after those who have leaked the information.
We're not targeting reporters. They're material witnesses, just like a reporter would be a material witness to a car crash. Yeah, they are witnesses. And so
in the question you want to ask them is who were their sources? That goes to the heart of the First Amendment.
No, the question we want to ask them is who provided them with classified national security information, which everybody in this body should want to protect.
I would hope. But really, David, it is Donald Trump, isn't it, who's driving all of this, driving this attack against the press. Todd Blanche, he simply implements it. Trump sees it as treason, doesn't he? Just explain that.
Yeah, that's right. I think Trump is personally offended when there are these leaks that hurt him, and he wants to find the leakers, and he wants to take revenge on them. He also tends to treat anything that is a criticism of him, or almost anything, as treasonous. Mm. So there was an incident that CNN first reported earlier this spring where Trump took a pile of press clippings reporting on the war in Iran and put a note on it that said treason in Sharpie letters and handed it to Blanche. Shortly thereafter, Blanche's Department of Justice issued subpoenas to the Wall Street Journal and the Washington Post. I think this is very much about his sense of criticism being improper. You know, he says that any criticism should be illegal and that it's not free speech. And we see that going on here as well.
And in the past, of course, justice officials, they probably would have resigned if they were ordered to take this sort of action. But not Todd Blanche. He actually defends it, doesn't he?
That's right. I mean, these are the kinds of red lines that previous Justice Departments have avoided crossing. And partly that is out of their own sense of moral probity. And partly that's out of a sense of what makes the Justice Department work. If it's viewed as kind of an in-house law firm for the president, it doesn't have a lot of credibility with the public or with courts, you know, with judges. And we've seen that the Trump administration is struggling with federal judges. They're getting a lot of skepticism. And I think that's partly because they are acting in this way and because Blanche is so willing to do these things and then to defend them publicly.
All right. Well, David, it appears the new Qatari-donated Air Force One, it needs a bit more work on it. And it's all sort of unsurprising when it comes to Donald Trump, isn't it? Accepting a plane as a gift, going after journalists. But just because we're no longer shocked by this sort of thing, it doesn't mean it won't have long-lasting impacts, does it?
Right. I think there's all kinds of questions that this raises. I mean, it continues to raise questions about whether the plane is safe, what the cost to American taxpayers of refitting this plane is and any kind of security deficits, whether the president is safe, how this affects the freedom of the press. And when this donation or gift or whatever we want to call it was announced, one of the things I said was that there's really no such thing as a free plane. There's always some sort of cost. And I'm not sure I could have predicted all of the costs, but I think we're starting to see some of them come into view now.
And the real Air Force One, the official American version, it has a very long history. Of course, there was even a movie made about it. And as you mentioned, there are some new ones being built. But tell me, what do you think, David? Will it ever be the same again?
Well, it's interesting. Trump even wants to repaint it. In fact, he has repainted it. And it was this very classic color scheme dating back to the 1960s in the John F. Kennedy administration. And so it's another place where Trump is sort of trying to put his stamp on things. It may change someday, but some of the mystique and some of the safety and some of the honor around it seems to be a little bit rubbed off.
David A. Graham is a staff writer at The Atlantic. This episode was produced by Sydney Peed and Louise Mylan. Audio production by Sam Dunn. Our supervising producer is David Cody. I'm Sam Hawley. ABC News Daily. We'll be back again on Monday. Thanks for listening.